loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker. First, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations has declared that North Korea is begging for war in the aftermath of its most recent nuclear test. Next, we talk about the Trump administration's decision to end DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Then we go to Houston, Texas. On a visit to Houston over the weekend, Donald Trump said the Hurricane Harvey relief operation was working out well, but the scale of devastation is immense. Next, we talk about the Syrian government forces who have breached a three-year siege of the strategic city of Deir al-Zor. Is the war with ISIS almost ended? And finally, while the U.S. mulls sending lethal weapons to Ukraine's government, Russia is proposing a peacekeeping operation in the eastern part of the country to defuse simmering tensions. But first, we turn to North Korea, its most recent nuclear weapons test, and U.S.-North Korean relations. We're joined from Washington, D.C. by Hans Christensen. He is the director of the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists. And we're joined from New Mexico by Greg Mello. He is the executive director of the Los Alamos Study Group. Welcome, Hans and Greg.
Hello. Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. This is a big issue, of course. World is sort of watching the Korean Peninsula right now. The outcome could be very grave. We want to be able to spend some time talking about the scientific, technological, and political issues. But before we do, I want to play a short audio clip. This is Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the UN, speaking at the UN yesterday. Let's listen to her, and then we'll start.
Kim Jong-un's action cannot be seen as defensive. He wants to be acknowledged as a nuclear power. But being a nuclear power is not about using those terrible weapons to threaten others. Nuclear powers understand their responsibilities. Kim Jong-un shows no such understanding. His abusive use of missiles and his nuclear threats show that he is begging for war.
Okay, I'm not so sure about that, Hans, that North Korea is begging for war. They might have a different agenda given how serious such a war would be. But let's talk about what North Korea has done, what they have achieved technologically with the latest nuclear test. Go ahead.
Well, the most significant development, of course, is the size of the explosion, which still has to be, you know, pinned down exactly. But the ranges I hear are sort of from 100 to 150 kiloton, depending on who you ask. And that's a significant increase from the 10 to 20 kiloton they had in the previous test. And then, of course, they have displayed what they say is a thermonuclear weapon, a two-stage thermonuclear weapon, which would be a significant technological step up the nuclear technology ladder if they had managed to do that. Normally, nuclear weapon states have in the past required a bit more nuclear testing to get to such a level. And so it is a surprise, of course, if it is such a weapon. I just want to say here that the yield in and of itself, of course, doesn't prove that it is a two-state thermonuclear weapon. You can also get that kind of a yield with a pure fission, so a single-stage fission weapon where you just pile a lot of uranium in. So, but it's a significant development. And certainly also, if seen in contact with the considerable progress they have demonstrated on ballistic missiles over the last, you know, several years, but especially under the current leader.
Okay, Greg Mello, the DPRK was in nuclear talks with the Bush administration, and before that, with the Clinton administration. They had suspended their program in the late 1990s, and then in the early term of George W. Bush, they announced they were leaving the NPT, the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. They began building nuclear weapons in earnest. Then there were talks at the end of the Bush administration. Those kind of collapsed. During the complete term of Obama, the two terms, the 8 years, Obama adopted something called strategic patience, meaning They were sort of treating North Korea's missile tests or nuclear weapons tests as a bargaining chip. In other words, to arouse alarm and fear from the West, and then the West would start to have negotiations with them. And Obama said, well, we're not going to play that game. We're just going to sit here and wait. They called it strategic patience. But in the meantime, the DPRK has made very, very, very significant advances in its technological capability.
Yes. And I think that it is well past time to start talking with the DPRK. It's more or less the opposite approach that Nikki Haley and President Trump have said. There's no other choice. They are a nuclear weapon state. They have a nuclear deterrent. It may or may not be, I think it's unlikely that it's can be sent to the continental United States, but that really doesn't matter. It will be soon in any case. It is possible to entertain doubts that they have a thermonuclear weapon, but there's no real strong reason to doubt that, I would say. I mean, a prudent person wouldn't doubt it if you're going to make decisions about being in a nuclear war with someone. Steve Bannon was right. Tens of millions of people would die in a war. The world would lose. And North Korea has won. If there was some kind of game where they were aiming to have a deterrent, well, they have one. And the United States has to talk to them in a serious way without preconditions. And the sanctions are not going to be helpful. I don't think we should be putting the screws on the population, because I don't think it will affect their weapons programs.
Hans Christensen, what's your attitude towards this? I mean, the sanctions, obviously the North Korean government has had very significant sanctions imposed on it. Russia's not happy. China's not happy with their nuclear program. On the other hand, both China and Russia are arguing that sanctions alone, even though they're going along with them, aren't going to do the trick. But what's your view?
Well, many things have been tried, and it's just that right now there seems to be sort of almost a competition to be the toughest, both in terms of language and operations, and that's clearly not helpful. And it is almost as if what's missing is a capacity, if you will, in the diplomatic corps and the political willingness to try new things. And I think that's what's necessary. You cannot just continue to turn on the existing heat as it's been before, because it's just like, it's like saying, you know, it didn't work before, so we'll try it again. And so they have to come up with a new game plan, and it has to be a sustained one, and it has to be an international one. But it does involve talking to the North Koreans directly. You can't scare them into submission. That has clearly been proven wrong. As for Haley's statement that, you know, that their posturing is not defensive, that nuclear deterrence is not about threatening, well, that certainly depends on where you're sitting, because, you know, in the case of North Koreans, they've been very adamant about the fact that theirs is definitely motivated because they see a significant threat against them from the United States and South Korea. And this is not about who started and all these things, but it's just to say that once you have nuclear weapons, you have them because you threaten their potential use. We have a deterrent directed against North Korea as well that is definitely intended to threaten potential use of nuclear weapons as well. So once you have nukes, you play this game, and that's the requirement that we're facing now. Like Greg said, North Korea is a nuclear weapon state. We have to figure out how to relate and interact and deal with that from now on.
Let me ask you a technical question before we go back to Greg Mello, Hans. David Albright, president of the Institute for Science and International Security, told the New York Times he was, quote, skeptical that this design has been miniaturized to fit reliably on a ballistic missile. Just help the audience understand, what is miniaturization? Why is it important? And does the DPRK have it?
Well, nobody really knows, of course, and we're into deep intelligence, of course, when it comes to specifics about this, but they're working on it. And what they did set off was quite evidently something significantly more powerful than what they've had in the past. So they've either made some real progress in that in terms of scaling up a pure fission weapon or by making this leap into a two-stage thermonuclear weapon. Whether it is one or the other, I think really doesn't matter. It's interesting technologically to talk about, but of course, you know, 150 kilotons, whether it's detonated by a pure fission weapon over a city or it is from a thermonuclear web, doesn't really matter. You know, it's the same destruction. Whether they can miniaturize that technology or how it looks is sort of the big question in terms of long-range ballistic missiles. We don't know if what was set off underground was an operational type of warhead or if it was an experimental testing device that still needs to be downgraded or downscaled. But again, the North Koreans are saying they say they have it, and if they don't already have it, that they're certainly trying to work their way toward that capability.
Greg Mello, it seems to me that the U.S. government, the U.S. policymakers have made a lot of mistakes over the years. Of course, when your country is so big and so powerful, so dominant militarily, you can make a lot of mistakes and people aren't necessarily held to account for them. But some of them are miscalculations. I mean, when you think back about what Iraq was, the Bush and Cheney thought and Rumsfeld said, oh, that'll be fast because Iraq was weak and America strong. And then here we are, you know, in 2017 and U.S. forces are still fighting in Iraq. When you think about Korea, the possibility of a miscalculation seems to me to be very strong. And the media, like when I read the Washington Post, I'm always shocked by what seems to me to be a profound ignorance by the editorial writers. I mean, just to be editorial myself, because they actually think North Korea can be sort of forced into the corner and somehow will be trembling and you know, drop its nuclear weapons program. The North Koreans are pretty sophisticated. They're not like a bunch of peasants who don't know anything. They keep surprising the world with their capability. Just talk about that and the danger of miscalculation here.
Yes, well, it's huge for the reasons that you state. And it's also typical for an empire in this stage of their history to overestimate what they can do and how compliant people will be. I think that there's kind of a dangerous dynamic in Washington underway, not just with respect to North Korea, but in other ways too, and it's amplified by the media that somehow is used to visions of U.S. omnipotence, and I think that our decision makers can find themselves in a very loud echo chamber with a lot of peer pressure and having to respond to headlines which are really uninformed and unhelpful. And, you know, everyone, nobody wants to be the person who in U.S. post-World War II history, no senior leader wants to be painted as weak. And so this dynamic could easily run. Well, it has run out of control, I think. I think it's very dangerous.
Yeah, Hans Christensen, you make your organization, the Federation of American Scientists, you're looking at nuclear weapons. Now the Trump administration is talking about a new generation of nuclear weapons that we have to make them great again. He's also tweeting this morning, I'm allowing Japan and South Korea to buy substantially increased amount of highly sophisticated military equipment from the United States. I mean, it just seems to me, given that the stakes are so high, that there must be a different path. Go ahead.
Well, we've been trying to deter North Korea since the 1950s. So deterring North Korea is not a new thing. And the various administrations over all these years have piled on capabilities, of course, in trying to make that deterrent credible or fine-tune it to circumstances or whatever. In a way, now, unfortunately, we now hear sort of the notion here that it is not possible to deter North Korea, and therefore we have to move beyond certainly, you know, just deterring, but certainly certainly diplomatic options. You know, there have been some tweets saying, you know, there is only one thing they understand, and I think that is just an enormously uninformed take on what is required right now. So you see a lot of shopping going around town here in Washington right now, where I think people who are pushing a need for new nuclear weapons and different types of weapons, different ways of operating and deploying them, they're going Christmas shopping because the political situation is ripe, super ripe, for how to push these through. There's nothing better as, you know, important new developments in foreign threats, whether it be North Korea or Russia. But also when you have an administration that seems, you know, simplistic in its approach to how to deal with this and very gung-ho. So that is a very dangerous combination because what's missing from that, of course, is the well-thought-out strategic diplomatic approach to how to work this issue behind the scenes so you get results that you want in close collaboration with the allies in the region.
Yeah, lack of information and gung-ho, a toxic and dangerous combination. We're completely out of time. We've been joined from Washington, D.C. by Hans Christensen. He's the director of the Nuclear Information Project at the Federation of American Scientists. And we have been joined from Mexico, New Mexico, by Greg Mello. He is the executive director of the Los Alamos Study Group. You're listening to Loud and Clear. We'll be right back.
Loud and Clear.